Hello, welcome everyone. It's great to see you all. Gloria, Henry, Arthur, Marina, Toby, Phyllis, looks like a Mayor, Oliver, Judd, and Melissa on. Good to see all of you. We are on Test Zion Ahmed Bays. Okay, so we are making progress as you can see because the next Ahmed on Yud Zion Ahmed Aleph on 17A, you know what happens? If you don't, I suggest just glancing a page ahead or a few pages in the art scroll. God willing, next week, if we stay on track, we will be completing the first parak of Megillah, which basically brings us halfway through the Masechta. So if you can make it through this first parak, you should be able to make it through all the other parakim. So it's a good feeling of accomplishment. Though, I will warn you, while today is mostly Agadita, next week, because, you know, the Chazal were, Henry, you know what I'm talking about, because Chazal were thinking, you know, they may have taken it too easy on us. They said, if you're going to finish the Perek, you're going to have to really work for it. So next week, we're really going to have to work for it because it's going to be a little bit of calculations and mathematics in the Gemara. But don't worry, that's for us to worry about next week. As of now, God willing, it should be smooth sailing. So we are in 16B to Zion Ahmed Beis. And here is the overview of what to expect. Previously, in our Gemara Shir, we started talking about Maisa of Asim Levanim. We talked about the significance about Binyamin getting the five garments and how that alluded to in the future. It was a symbol for the five that Mordechai would wear at the end of the Megillah. So what the Gemara is going to do is, once we started bringing the connection to Mordechai and Binyamin and Yosef and the Shvatim, so then the Gemara takes the liberty of explaining and elaborating a little bit more on that narrative, even though, you know, spoiler alert, it doesn't really pertain to our discussion. Hopefully that's not a surprise at this point. Then about halfway down the Amud, the Gemara will revert to darshaning the parak, and mostly I think in parak tests in the ninth chapter, and the tenth one's pretty short. So that means we're almost done. So that's what we have. And then at the end, there's actually going to be a fascinating few lines in the Gemara toward the end where we talk about how Talmud Torah, the study of Torah, supersedes many other Jewish values, and we'll, God willing, address that when we get there. So here we go. We are on the top of Test Zion Ahmed Beis, 16B. It's about eight lines, I believe, down from the top of the page. And in the art scroll, I would imagine it's still on the first page in the art scroll. Okay, here we go. Vayipol al tzavarei Binyamin achiv. So Yosef, then, when he embraces Binyamin, he falls upon the necks of his brother Binyamin, which is an odd word. Why is it in plural? How many necks did he have? Generally, human beings only have one neck. So Amar Rabbi Lazar, Bacha al Shnei Mikdashim Shasidin Lios Bechelkul Shah Binyamin, Basidin Lecharev. What is it referring to? What he means is that he was crying on his shoulder, he was crying on his neck twofold, once for the first Beis HaMikdash, and second time for the other Beis HaMikdash, because they were in the territory of Binyamin. Binyamin actually shared it with Shevet Yehuda, but I believe the Heichal, the main building, the main sanctuary of the Beis HaMikdash, was actually in Binyamin's territory. So again, it's a lot of, what do you might call, it's portending the future. Then, Binyamin b'chal tzavarav, and Binyamin then wept on Yosef's neck. Why did he weep? Also, alluding to what will happen in the future, b'chal mishkan shilo she'asalios b'chelko sho Yosef v'asalei. He was mourning over the future destruction of Mishkan Shiloh, of the tabernacle which preceded the Beis HaMikdash, which was located in the land of Yosef inside Eretz Yisrael. Okay, and the Gemara now is going to proceed, and it's going to darshan, it's going to interpret a few more psukim for us. So the question is, why is it that First, it refers to the eyes of the brothers, and then separately to Binyamin. Amar Rabbi Elazar, Amar Lehem, Yishem She'en Belibi Al Binyamin Achish Shelo Hayu B'Mechirasi, Kach Ein Belibi Aleichem. The same way, I don't have anything, I don't hold anything against Binyamin, because he didn't sell me. Know that I regard you the same way as I regard Binyamin. Kifi Hamedaber Aleichem. Kifi Kain Libi. Just as I am in my mouth, so too I am in my heart. Which I believe actually is one of the praises that was given to the Shvatim, that they also were consistent with what they expressed with their mouth and what they felt in their heart. So they weren't exactly hiding the fact that they despised Yosef, even, and it was in their hearts. So, you know, you got to hand it to them. At least they were consistent. At least they didn't put on a facade on the outside. Ulaviv shalach kizos asara chamorim nosim mituv mitzrayim. And so we know that Yosef sends all of these chamorim, all of these donkeys. And then, of course, we have the allusion to the Egla Arufa, which happens. So why? What's going on over here? My mituv mitzrayim. What is considered to be the finest goods that Egypt has to offer? Rabban Yambar Yefes, Rabbi Elazar, Shaglo Yain Yashin Shadatsa came Noche Menu. You know, he sent him some wine from the Kiddush Club. Right? Everyone knows, you know, you go to the 7 o'clock, you go to 8 o'clock Kiddush. You see, like all the gentlemen, we all get around and we like some scotch, we like some old wine. So nothing's really changed. They didn't have scotch back then because, as far as I know, Egypt was not in contact with Scotland back then. So unfortunately, they didn't know of scotch, so they made do with what they had. So they had wine. Okay, you know, that's what they had. Worst things happened back then. Vayelchu gam achiv vayichlu lefanav, Amar Rabban Yamin bar Yefes, Amar Rabbi Elazar. So all the Shvatim, all the brothers of Yosef now prostrate to him. Hayin da'amri inchi, this is like the saying. So you'll see this many times. We see this a number of times in the Gemara already, but I'll just point it out. You see this in the Gemara sometimes where there are expressions that they had back in Talmudic times. And the Rabbanim will say, this is like that expression that people use. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Maharal and some of the more mystically inclined commentators believe that there's something deeper to these expressions. But the pshat is that it's referring to just a common aphorism that was known back then. So hayinu da amri inshi, it's like people say, taleb idane sogile, that a fox, when it's in its right time, when it's successful, even a fox you should bow down to. So now a fox, when you think about the animal kingdom, a lion is the king, and a fox, in contrast to a lion, is a lowly animal. But a fox, even when he's successful, you should be submissive to him. This is akin to what we saw with Haman. Remember, we learned previously that Esther was concerned that Haman was being matzliach, he was being successful. And we said, you don't want to mess with somebody when it looks like mazel is on their side. Okay. But the Gemara asks, Tala, my bitzavrose meachove, why bitzivrose meachove? So why is it that Yosef is considered to be like a fox in contrast to his brothers? Ela I itmar hachi itmar. Rather, what is he referring to? Who's the fox and who's the lion in this scenario? All the brothers were equal. So rather, vayishtachi Yisrael arosh hamita, it's referring to when Yaakov got up and he bowed towards Yosef. Amar Rabbi Binyamin bar Yefes, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Talabi Donei Sagile. That's what it's referring to, that even the lion Yaakov was submissive toward Yosef in that moment, even though Yosef was the fox in the scenario, in contrast to Yaakov being the lion. Okay. Next, and I think this is the final drusha for this section on our digression to talk about Yosef and his brothers. Vayinachim osam v'idaver alibam. Now Yosef is trying to assuage their concerns. He's trying to make sure that the Shvatim, the brothers, don't think he's going to take vengeance upon them. Amar Rabbi Binyamin bar Yefes, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Velame Shamar Lehem Devarim Shmiskavlin Al Halev. Yosef told them something that he thought would be a form of consolation, a form of assurance to them that he would not seek vengeance against them. Uma asar neos lo yichlu lo yachlu chavos ner echad. Just as 10 candles, even though they produce some smoke, they don't. It's not a sufficient amount of smoke to put out a single candle. Ner echad half yachlu chavos asar neros. How could one ner, referring to Yosef, be able to put out asar neros, 10 neros, 10 candles of his brothers? I don't know. I personally would have been too comforted by that. He could still try to kill him anyway, because this is one candle with a whole army behind him. But okay, I guess that worked. And again, this is probably one of the zagatas, like many, that have a deeper meaning behind it. But alas, we'll leave it as such. Good. Any questions before we get back to darshaning the Megillah? All right. I didn't expect any. Just pretty straightforward. Okay, this is I think the way Yaakov Farachi he was giving a speech one time. He's like, oh, and this is the, we're now going to read the pasuk that Megillah Esther stole from Havdalah. Like, you know, it's the Or V'Simcha Sasavi Kar. So to all the Jews, there was light, there was simcha, happiness, there was jubilation, and there was honor. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Ora Zotor. So what are all these different positive ideas that are being shared? Remember, even though the Megillah is not the Torah, generally it's also meticulous in its wording. So if it's saying, and there was light, and we were happy, and there was jubilation, and there was honor, like, what does each word come to convey? So each word refers to something. Ora Zotor, no surprise, light refers to the light of Torah. V'cheinu omer ki ner mitzvah u Torah or. So we see that the flame of a mitzvah and the Torah's light. Simcha ze yom tov. Simcha refers to yom tov, to the holidays. V'chein omer, v'samach debechakecha, as we have an imperative that you shall have simcha, happiness on yom tov. And there's actually halachic ramifications for that. Rambam talks about him. He's actually based on the Gemara Pesachim, if I'm not mistaken, perhaps elsewhere, that says that before Yontif, you should get things for the family. The kids, you get little nuts, get some candies for them. For the women, you let them go buy a dress. Actually, I think it says you buy it for them, but it's probably a smarter strategy not to go out and buy it yourself. I'm just giving myself advice over here. And also, when it comes to what one serves on their menu for Yom Tov, one should also be serving meat. Because the difference between Shabbos and Yontif is that Shabbos, we have an imperative of oneg Shabbos. Oneg is subjective. So if I like a lasagna, I can have lasagna on Shabbos. Ironically, people tend to have dairy more often on Yontif than on Shabbos. But actually, there's more an imperative to have meat on Yontif because Simcha is objective. And objectively, Simcha refers to Ein Simcha El B'Basar V'Yayin, of meat and wine. Now, let's say I really enjoy instead a lasagna and a lagavulin. Well, happens to be that the basar v'yayin, it's referring to the basar of the karbanos, so the offerings that are brought to Yom Tov. So perhaps since we don't have the offerings nowadays, maybe there is no chiv to have the meat on Yom Tov at your meal, and you can enjoy a lasagna instead with a lagavulin. Moving on. Sason zo mila. The jubilation refers to that of a bris mila. And for those who are with us this morning, when we were doing the our Agadata class, we actually saw exactly this drasha. V'chein hu omer, how do we know that Mila refers to jubilation? Because it says, Sas anochi al imrasecha kamotzi shalarav, that I rejoice over your words. And if you look in Rashi, where do you see bris Mila in that sentence? It could just be referring to Torah. So if you look in Rashi says, Zo mila shenisna b'ma'amar v'lo b'dibor. As it says, v'yomer Hashem el Avra. So this is a mitzvah that wasn't given with v'yedaber, but v'yomer instead. And then Rashi goes on actually to quote an agadata about David HaMelech, that David HaMelech, when he was in the bathhouse, when he was in the Beis HaMerchatz, he was... He was very dismayed. So the question is, was someone trying to ask a question? Okay. So what
Yes,
happened?
I was, and you muted me.
Oh, I thought there was just background noise coming from
No,
me.
I wanted to ask you, is there another place where we say that quote on a yontif, Sasanochi Alim Ratecha?
Sorry.
On the
Henry,
yontif.
it looks like Henry, you're trying to say something else. You're responding to Phyllis? Oh, you're still muted. Shmuel, you're not able to mute.
On some other
Okay.
chag on yontif.
It's in before
Yeah.
Tehillah Shofar. It's one of the
Right.
psukim.
Thank you.
Very
Right.
good.
Right.
Very
Thank
good
you.
memory.
Yeah.
Very good. Right. And those psukim, where is it? What is it like?
Yeah.
Ashrei. Okay.
Before Tehillah.
Right. Right. But that has nothing to do with Mila there.
Yeah, so well, that's the thing, because if you look at the psukim, it seems to just be referring to mitzvos in general. There's actually a likud sefer ala Torah, which is just ideas on the parsha called Shalal Rav. So the chiddush here is that al pi drush, or not al pi drush, but al pi al chazal are understanding it that it's an allusion to bris milah. But your point's very well taken. Pshat in the pasuk is that it could be referring to the word of God in general, which is just about having a passion, a chavivus for mitzvos in general. Okay. V'ikar elutzon, finally. And when it talks about glory, about honor, like yakar, it's referring to tefillin. V'chinu omer, ru'u kol amei ha'aretz kishim Hashem nikra alecha v'yir mimecha. So, in reference to how all the nations will see us, now, how does someone identify a Jew? Now, the thing is, at least for a Jewish man, and they didn't have yarmulkes back then. Back in the day of times of the Gemara, it was midas chasidus. If somebody wanted to be extra religious, they wore a yarmulke. Now it's become the norm. So, how would you identify someone? Oh, if he's wearing tefillin. So, tefillin, especially the shel rosh, is how you could see very clearly someone's a Jew and they wear the tefillin. And so since in that context, it's talking about them revering the Jewish people, we see that's an allusion to tefillin. Utani Rabbi Lezer HaGadol Omer, Eilu Tefillin Shebarosh, that's the Braisa, that it's referring to the Tefillin Shebarosh, which is a tefillin that is seen publicly, as opposed to the Shel Yad that we wear in our arm and we cover up. That's personal. Very good. This next drasha, which is a halacha, is well known because if you pay attention to the Megillah, you'll notice what happens. So we have all the 10 sons of Haman that are listed in the Megillah. Amar Avadam, Diminyafo, Aseres b'nei Haman, v'aseres b'nei 10 children, 10 sons of Haman. And all 10 of them need to be said in one breath. My taima, why is that so? Because all of them died in the same moment, and therefore we read them all together in one breath. But not to worry for Henry or anyone. I forgot, Judd, are you a Megillah laner also? Or I know you do Kriyas HaTorah. I forgot if you lay Megillah, but.
No, never did.
Okay, neither did I. So, I feel like I'm in good company
No,
now. What was that?
I agree with you. You're in good company.
Okay. It's about Henry, let's say, you just need to take a breath in the middle. So look in Tosos tells us, yatsa. So if for some reason your voice just gives out, you need to take a breath in the middle. B'diavad, you're still Yotze in the Megillah. There's no need to go back at that point. Amar Rav Yochanan, Vav Divazit, how do you pronounce that? Henry, give me the name. Vaizosa, right?
The Vaisata,
Vaizosa, Vaizot, or Vaizata, yes. Vaizosa, Sarech Lemitcha Bizakifa, Kimaradia Delibros. So, that vav, if you look in the Megillah, and Henry, you can verify this for us, the vav is written in a very straight-up fashion, like a pole that would be used on by the boats on the rivers of Libros, because basically my understanding is that it was a very shallow water, and they needed special poles to just push them off from the shore. This perhaps ever happened if you ever went white water rafting. and you start drifting to the side of the river, everyone starts using their oars to kind of push it aside and get the rafts back into the water. So they had this as a consistent issue. So the way those poles looked, how they were all long, they're very long and straight up, very long. So that way the boat, they could push the boat off before it got close to shore. So too, it should be a very long, elongated vav for the vav of Vaizasa. And now my time up. And now why do we do that? Because they were all hanged on the same pole. So it's to commemorate that fashion. Moving on, Viter. Amar Echanin of our Papa, Darja Shila Ishkvar Tamrasa, Kol Hashiros Kul Nechtovas Ariach Al Gabe Levena, Levena Al Gabe Ariach. So if you look at all the different Shiros, let me, it's like a good pop quiz time over here, right? So we have all the different Shiros in the Torah. I have a list of them right over here. Unless someone wants to rally them off on their own. I mean, we have Yashir, we have the Shiros Devora, I know we have a Yeshua also. I think there was a Shira as well. There's a number of Shiras in Koheles. We have the Shira as also. What else am I missing, Henry?
Zeno.
Zeno, of course, Judd. Oh, thank you. Right, we got
Our right here.
And Miriam.
Well, that says Yashir.
Yeah.
Yeah. The others? Any others I'm missing? I know that. Here they are. Shiras Ayam, that's us Yashir, Miriam Phyllis. Shiras Habe'er, there's another Shira in Bamidbar Parakov Aleph at the well. Shiras Hazinu, Judd, like you said. And then there's the Malchi Kanash Na'ergu in Yeshua in chapter 12 of the Kings of Canaan. Shiras Devora, the song of Devora in Shoftim Parakei. Shiras David Hamelech, King David had in Shmuel Beis, Parak Chav Beis. And then Lechol's Ma Beis in Koheles in the third chapter. And then finally, the Aseres B'nei Haman is considered a Shira as well, the way it's organized. So those are all the Shiros that are in Tanakh. So
with the Hodu Hashem, with the Hodus on Shabbos, Shacharis.
Oh, interesting. You're saying
because that's also blocked off like that.
You know what? The thing is, you don't really find it on a klaf. So I wonder, right? Because like Tehillim, you don't lean from Tehillim. So maybe that's shot why it's not mentioned. But you're right. The way it's organized would be like that. Interesting point. Okay, yeah, I guess if you're writing a klaf with Tehillim on there, would you write it like the way it appears in the Siddur there? It's a good question. I don't know what the Nafli is. We don't name it.
How about Ashrei?
What would make it a Shira in this context?
I've read that it is.
Right, so I guess it depends on what we mean by Shira. I think we mean structurally over here. The way, you know, so this is what the Gemara is talking about. So what you have is, there's different understandings of what it means. Well, we'll go with Rashi.
It has a structure, the alphabet.
Right, but that's not the structure we're talking about here. We're talking about bricks. So there's like the way the words are formatted. I wish I had one. You know what? Let me grab it. What's that? Let's pick an example. All right, so let's go to Perek Tesvav. Right, let's go to Perek Tesvav in Shemos, and I'll show you what I mean for in case we are not familiar. Perek Tesvav for Uz Yashir. Need to play like the on hold music. Okay, here we go. This is Uz Yashir. So you can see over here. Get this right. You can see over here, right? Can we see on the screen? Is that clear enough? So you see over here. These are what we call the Ariach. These are the bricks, the words. And Levina is the other kind of brick, which refers to the empty spaces in between. Okay? So you notice that when it comes to Uz Yashir, Notice the brickwork over here, how it's made in a structurally sound format. Whereas the names in, let's go all the way to Megillas Esther now, keep that in mind. Go to the back of the Chumash, in the art scroll stone Chumash, where we have our Megillas. Shouldn't be too hard to find, Megillas Esther. Let's get to the ninth chapter. You look over here at the B'nai Haman, notice how it's not one brick on top of the other in a structurally sound fashion. Imagine you tried building a structure like this and you just put one brick directly on top of the other. What would happen? Right? You ever played Jenga? And then you pull out one too many bricks in Jenga and then just like a lot of bricks standing on top of each other. What happens? It topples down. So that's what the Gemara is telling us over here. Take a look back in the Gemara. That was fun.
So if one falls, they all fall. Whereas with the bricks, there is some support underneath. The
bricks like this, there's support because you distribute the weight. But when you put it all up in just one on top of the other like this, it eventually just topples over.
That's so nice.
That's why it's deliberately structured like that. So kol ashir kol nechtovus ariach gavi levino levino gavi ariach chutz mishira zo umachiknan. Except for this shira of the 10 sons of Haman and the kings of Canaan, shariach agavi ariach levina agavi levina, my taima shlotahei tekuma lepalasan, so that they should never get up from their downfall. That's why it's structured as such. Great. Now we understand what we're looking at when we look inside the Tanakh. Moving on. By Yomer Hamelcha Esther Hamalcha Beshushan Abira Harga Yehudim. So you have to look at the rest of the pasuk. Actually, it's Yud Dalid. If you're looking at the Torah or Hashalem, you'll notice the end of the pasuk. So basically, the beginning of the pasuk is Asher is like, look at all these people. The Jewish people are killing all my civilians. And at the end, he says, and what else can I do for you, Esther? So it sounds like at the beginning of the pasuk he was angry, and at the end of the pasuk he was very generous to Esther. So what happened mid-sentence that all of a sudden changed his mood? I think we need to like keep a tally of every time an angel intervenes and hits somebody in the story to make something happen. So an angel came and hit him on the mouth. Actually, you know what? I'm curious. Is that the Lashon Anida that's used when referring to the angel? I think that's the same Lashon, if not mistaken.
By the Shalom's Zohar.
Exactly. So that's the angel coming to the kid before he leaves the womb. So I wonder, it'd be interesting if there was some sort of a godic connection between them. I'm only just thinking of that right now. So maybe someone listening here will look at the Mefarshim, or maybe I'll take a look afterwards to see if there's a connection. I guess you could say the angel rendered him dumbfounded. And that's why he all of a sudden forgot what he was saying, just like a kid, you know, all of a sudden, he's dumbfounded. He forgets the little Torah that he does. Uvolifei Amelch Amar Im HaSefer. So Amar Mivayale. It should say Esther Zuna talking over here. So why is it Amar? It should be Amra. Amar of Yochanan, Amar Lo, Yamer Bepeh Mashikasa B'Sefer. What she's saying is it should be said by a male laner, the Megillas Esther. Megillas Esther, the story should be recounted for all generations. Divrei shalom ve'emes, words of peace and truth. Amar Rabbi Tanachum, Bar La, Amar Rabbi Asi, Melamish Tzricha Sirtut Kamita Shel Torah. If you ever look carefully at a cloth, you'll notice that there's lines etched into it. You see it on Gittin as well. We do it. So for Tanakh and other documents, we'll do what's called Sirtut, where the practical reason is really just to make sure that. You know, if you imagine you have a blank piece of paper with no lines on it, you start writing all over the place. The lines aren't straight. So we do sirtut, we have straight lines, and that way you can use those lines to make sure that the Torah is written in a mesudar fashion. Okay, same thing for the Megillah. Ki Mordechai Yehudi Mishnah Lamecha Chashver Shugadol Yehudi V'ratzo Yilarov Achiv. So notice how it says how Mordechai was in good terms with the majority of his brothers. Larovachiv, lo lecholachiv.
Echav,
echav, thank you. Sorry, echav, right, that's correct. Thank you, in the plural.
All right.
So he was accepted by most of his brothers, but not all of his brothers. And I think actually, this was a debate. Some people were schmoozing about this on the social media channels. Someone pointed out that the actual translation might not be Rov as in majority, but Larov to the multitudes is what it means. But the way Chazal are darshaning, the way Chazal understand it here, is that saying most people liked him, which that's usually how it works when someone, you know, you could be someone who's as good as Mordechai, who saves the Jewish people from imminent destruction. But at the end of the day, there's still going to be a lot of haters anyway. And that's just the nature of being a public figure, apparently. So Malami Shapir should be men of Mixas Sanhedrin. So it teaches that not just the common folk were talking about him at Kiddush or at their Shabbos table, say, oh, you see what Mordechai did? But even his colleagues on the Sanhedrin, his rabbinic colleagues, also began to distance themselves from him a little bit. Rav Yosef, Gadol Talmud Torah Yosef Me'atzalos Nefashos. What we see from here is that the study of Torah is even greater than saving human lives. How do we know this? Demei Kara Chashiv LeMordechai Basar Dalid Uvesof Basar Chamisha. So Mordechai fell behind in the rankings of the Talmid Chachamim back then. Siv Asher Bo'im Zeruba fell Yeshua Nechemia Sharaya Ra'aliyah Mordechai Bolshan. So if we look over here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Uvesof Siv Ha'Bo'im Zeruba Yeshua Nechemia Zara Rami Nachmei Mordechai Bolshan. So we see that Mordechai fell in the rankings one tier below. Apparently, the Moetzes Gedolei Torah back then, that's always what I wanted to do. You know, wouldn't that be amazing if, like, I guess we had Gedolim cards when I grew up. So they were, like, just, like, Gedolim stickers with arbitrary numbers on them. And it was, like, a collect-them-all kind of thing. And supposedly, the first person who collected all of the different Gedolim cards and put it in their sticker album, they would get a free trip on El Al to Eretz Yisrael. There's a whole scandal, I remember. I still remember, we didn't know the names of the rabbis. We just knew their numbers, like 180 and 190 and 204, I remember. Those were the rarest cards that you could find. It was like Magic the Gathering, basically. And the scandal is that everyone kept buying more packs and more packs at the Janaka shop, but nobody could get 180 or 190 because they weren't yet in circulation. So meanwhile, everyone's spending all their money so that they could collect them all. But meanwhile, they didn't even put it out into circulation. So it was, why did I bring that up? Oh, because imagine they, like, you know, actually, they didn't give rankings to the Gedolim, but it was basically in our minds, the rarer cards were the better rabbis. It's like Pokemon, basically. That's what it was. Wow, I'm just reflecting on it now.
Rabbi? I'm a little perturbed. Maybe I'm not understanding it properly. Talmud Torah Yoter Mehatzalat Nefashot. Yeah. I don't get it. I thought Pikuach Nefesh was greater than observance of Shabbos or anything.
So we have to understand what we mean by greater. Yeah. Next question for us. Phyllis points out, wait, don't we know the age-old principle that Pikuach Nefesh Shofesh Shabbos? Certainly, if I'm learning, right, let's say right now we're learning, God, you know, God forbid, you know, in the next room, there's a life-threatening emergency, then I have to stop my learning, I have to get up, I have to help someone. You know what happened, actually, this past week, I was middle chakras, I was davening, it was middle psukah de zimra, and one person comes over to me, he's like, oh, there's someone visiting the shul, he needs the Wi-Fi password. And I'm like, can this wait till after davening? Is this like life-threatening? And then, like, apparently he bothered another person at Minyan. The other person at Minyan came over to me also. Like, oh, this guy, like, really wants the Wi-Fi pass. I'm like, we're in the middle of davening right now. You know, like, this, it's not Pikuach Nefesh. The guy can wait for the Wi-Fi password unless he really needs it to context something important. So, okay. So, but if there was a true Pikuach Nefesh, then you would stop davening. You would stop learning. And in fact, this is the question. We say Talmud Torah Keneged Kulam in Elu Dvarim. We list all of these amazing mitzvos, and we say Talmud Torah is greater than all of them. But at the same time, how is it that every mitzvah seems to supersede Talmud Torah? So the answer that the Stipler and others give is that it's not that these other mitzvos are qualitatively greater than the study of Torah. Talmud Torah is keneged kulam. It's the paramount, perhaps one of the most important mitzvah, not the most important mitzvah. You have to look back actually at the Gemara that we learned at the beginning of Megillah, where we did some rankings as well. What it's saying is, but what's the nature of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? When one has a zman panoi, when one has free time, then they are obligated to study Torah. Shad is, it doesn't even have to be bikuach nefesh. If there's another mitzvah that requires my attention, if there's gemilas chasadim, if there's someone who needs help with a particular chesed, I also would, if it's efshar la'asai de'acher, if no one else can do that chesed and help, then I should stop my learning temporarily and fulfill that mitzvah. It's not necessarily saying that mitzvah is greater than Talmud Torah, but it's that at that moment when there's another mitzvah, I am not chayiv in Talmud Torah. So I'm only chayiv in Talmud Torah when I have the time, when I have open time to study Torah. The challenge is, of course, I'm preaching to the choir over here. Baruch Hashem, each and every one of you, the fact you're here right now shows that you're committed to Talmud Torah. But it's challenging for a person in general to be honest with themselves what's considered open time. I have this challenge all the time. Well, I could really spend more time with my daughter right now. Oh, maybe I need a little time to eat dinner. Oh, maybe I need time just to relax and decompress after all those emails, whatever it might be. So it's a huge challenge. Person needs to know themselves and to be honest. I'm speaking, I know rabbis say this all the time, but I'm speaking to myself as well over here. Okay. So how do we know that? So we have the rankings. That's how we know Talmud Torah is even greater. So you know what? Mordechai did the right thing. He was the man of the hour. He was needed in order to save the Jewish people from imminent destruction. Nonetheless, it still took a toll on him. There were still many days that he wasn't able to study in the base medrash, and so he fell lower in the Gedolim rankings. Who determines the yields? Okay, I'm not going to get into ranking Gedolim over here. Let's move forward. Another statement. Amar Rav Yitim Rav Shmuel Bar Marsa. A similar statement. Gadol Talmud Torah Yaisim Rebinya Beis HaMikdash. You see, imagine we have the Haredim versus Zionist debate over here. So this is would be a Haredi favorite. That studying Torah is even greater than rebuilding the Holy Temple, than rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. So there you go. You don't need to work on resettling and rebuilding the land of Israel and rebuilding the base of Mikdash. The study of Torah is even greater than that. Now we know Ezra was a big Zionist. Ezra was the one who took the Olei Bavel from Babylonia. They went back up to Eretz Israel to build the second base of Mikdash. But even Ezra, who was a big Zionist and wanted to make Aliyah, move to Israel and bring the Jewish people back to their homeland, even he did not leave until his Rebbe, until his teacher died. And once there was no one there to teach him Torah more so than he would gain elsewhere, so then it was time to move to Eretz Yisrael. One last statement, and with this, I think we'll end off. Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Shmuel Bar Marsa. Gadol Talmud Torah Yosem Mikibud Av. So we know Talmud Torah is greater than saving people's lives. We know it's greater than rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. This next one, if I told it to you out of the blue, you might be surprised. But after hearing these two, what could be greater than Hatzalas Nefashos? So Talmud Torah is even greater than Kibud Av Va'im. It's even greater than honoring one's parents. How do we know this? As we know that Yaakov Avinu, when he spent all those years studying in Yeshivas Shem Ve'Aver, he was not taken into account. He was not held accountable, even though he wasn't able to serve his parents during that time. Still, that was not held against him because Talmud Torah is even greater. Tamar Mar, Lama Nimnishnosa Shal Yishmael, moving on to Yin Sayin Amav 17a. Why is it that the Torah counts the years of Yishmael's life? Usually, we don't count the years of Rishayim. That's a Rashi's. Why do we care to know the amount of years a Rasha lived? Some might ask, why do we care to know the amount of years a Tzaddik lived either? But okay, be it as it may, it's a little more odd to see the years of a Russia listed. So the answer is, it's just as a means, it's in order for us to know how many years, what Yaakov was doing during what years. Ma'as shana 137 years. Now, how do we figure out all these calculations? Well, as I warned you at the beginning of this session, God willing, next time we're going to have some mathematics on our hands. Now, before we conclude, there's one piece from Rav Zilberstein. How about I'll open up with the question.
Rabbi, why did they use Ishmael and not Sarah? She was the first one in the Torah where it says that.
What we'll have to do is we'll have to look at the Gemara next time where we'll explain the rationale for how we figure out all the mathematics. Now, why the Torah couldn't just tell us explicitly and left it up to us mathematicians, that's a good question. But we'll delve more into that one next time, folks, God willing. But I'll leave you off with a question that if there's time, we'll address next time. A very interesting question. So we just talked about Kibbutz of the Ein. So Rav Zilberstein brings up the following question. So we know that certain things supersede Kibbutz of the Ein, even though it's a very great mitzvah. Let's say the case he brings up is that there was a child raised by two parents who adopted him, and he has a chance to meet his biological parents. But the parents who spent all the years adopting him, raising him, paying all those yeshiva tuition dollars, they feel a little bit slighted, saying like, what, are we not your real parents at this point? We're the ones who invested in you all these years. So the question Zilberstein deals with is it an affront to Kibbutz of the Aim? And the question deals with this, when we talk about the mitzvah of Kibbutz of the Aim, Kibbutz of the Aim on a strict halachic level seemingly refers to one's biological parents. But is it possible that one's adopted parents may be the new primary recipients of Kibbutz of the Aim? What happens when your Kibbutz of Aim to your adopted parents is in conflict with your Kibbutz of Aim to your biological parents? So God willing, I think we'll end here, but God willing, if we have some time at the beginning of our next session, we'll God willing open up with that piece. So that way we have something fun to do other than just mathematics. And then no reason why we shouldn't hopefully be starting the first parak next time as well. If anyone wants to come in shul and join me next week so we can make a siyum on the first parak together, you're more than welcome to join me for the occasion. If you do plan to come, let me know, and I can even go and pick up some stuff. That would make it worth the while. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, and good Shabbos.
Just a reminder, we have a scholar in residence at Shabbos, Yisrael Ben Parad, who's a PhD canon, early American history, studying the Puritans, a colleague of mine who I've been very familiar with his work, and I'm very excited for it. So he'll be speaking at the 10:30 a.m. shir after the 8 a.m. minyan, as well as a shir before Mincha Shabbos afternoon at 7:15, and then between Mincha Marv during Shal Shura. So I want to encourage you, if you can, to come out and hear the lectures. It promises to be very fascinating. Okay, take care, everyone. Good Shabbos.
Thank you.